Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf alongside Nick Wright, Kevin Wilds. We've got Chris Broussard with us on a Tuesday morning. Coming up, guess who's telling the world not to bet against Cam Newton? Are the Steelers, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the sleeper pick this NFL season? We'll let you know who's saying that. And will 3 months off help or hurt LeBron James when the NBA does indeed return? And speaking of returns, that's where we start this morning. We are getting closer to the league's expected return date of July 31st. Still 2 months away, though. What that will look like remains to be seen. Adrian Wojnarowski reported yesterday that a 22-team model with a play-in situation is expected to overwhelmingly pass during Thursday's vote. Nick, I know it's not your favorite proposal, but you got to be happy you're getting the NBA back, right?
Well, you know what, Jenna? That's the perfect lead-in because I haven't done an about-face on this, but I've decided to change the way I'm looking at this slightly in that I was concerned about the NBA shaking the snow globe too much. I was vehemently opposed to the silly group stage idea. It looks like that's not going to happen. So I've decided that especially right now in a time where we need, damn it, we need some type of good news, some type of good cheer, I'm all in on this. I support this entirely. I'm not going to complain about it. I'm not going to parse it. I'm not going to tweak it and say, you know what, yeah, this could have been better. Baseball doesn't even know if they're going to be able to play. Their players and owners are arguing, understandably on the players' behalf, about the owners potentially going back on an agreement. But still, we don't know if their season's going to happen. The NBA's got great leadership from Adam Silver, great leadership from the union and its star players. And what I was most concerned about, Wilds, is fairness here. And I realized this morning when I was thinking about it that I should really only be worried about the fairness for the 13 teams in the league this year that have winning records. If you're under 500, as the Nets are, as the Magic are, as the Grizzlies are, three teams that right now would be in the playoffs that in this format could end up being out of the playoffs, I don't really feel badly for you. As long as the top seven teams in the West who are above 500 and the top six teams in the East, those 13 teams are going to be in the playoffs either way, as I think they will be in this format, then I'm good with it. If you're under 500 through 65 games, you only have yourself to blame if you end up missing the postseason. So I don't think anyone's going to be really screwed here, even if Memphis feels like their situation's a little more precarious than it was. So I'm good with it. I'm happy that they have kind of split the baby here to a degree, not only just limiting it to 16, not bringing all 30. The 22 teams resume the regular season in part, have a play-in to figure out the last couple playoff spots. I'm fine with it, Kevin Wilds.
That's great. I'm surprised to hear you say that, Nick, but I like it. I wish we could fast forward a few months and see if you'll like it when the Lakers are down 3-1 to the revamped Portland Trailblazers, because I think the Blazers are the biggest winner in all this. Currently, they are 29-37. But look, Dame says, first of all, Dame did a great job of saying he's not playing meaningless games, and I actually think he moved the meter and moved some public thought on whether or not the Blazers should come back. And now they're going to be back, and they're going to be great. He said that Zach Collins is coming back. He said Nurkic is coming back. So while all these teams that you talked about, Sacramento, Memphis, Phoenix is going to play San Antonio, you know what these teams are. You don't know who the Blazers are. You're actually going to play last year's Blazers that went 45-27 with Nurkic, plus Hassan Whiteside, plus Melo. So, Nick, I'm glad you had an about-face on this and you're pro this proposal. But I think you're going to be very worried when you look up and Damian Lillard's doing that like mean face to the camera because he hit another game-winning shot against the Lakers, Broussard.
Wild, stop it. This is not a battle rap, all right? The Dame Dollar, yeah, okay, they might be playing. You know, I get it. He's good. Nurkic and all these guys will be back. But the Lakers, they're going to challenge the Lakers. They will go out in the first or second round, even if they do make the playoffs. So let's not build up the Blazers too much. And Nick, that was a great soliloquy that you gave at the beginning of the show. You could have just said, Broussard convinced me yesterday that the 22-game play-in is the best way to go. This is great. Look, I do feel for Oklahoma City's owner, Clay Bennett. You know, it's reported he made a passion plea to the league that, hey, these small market teams, we need to get our players in front of the fans again. We can't be off for 8 or 9 months. It's going to hurt us in sponsorship and excitement and things like that. But the fact is, a lot of those players on those bottom teams that would have no shot at making the playoffs are not motivated to come back and play 5, 6 to 8 regular season games that are meaningless, and they risk injury. So as much as he was making some sense, I think this is the smart move. Everyone that comes back will be motivated. That decreases the chances of injury when players are really invested, not only physically, but mentally. And this play-in tournament, I get what you're saying, Nick, about fairness. But look, it's going to be a March Madness type thing to me. And we never worry about the fairness with that. You know, if Carolina goes 30-1 in the regular season and then loses to a 7 seed in March Madness, we don't worry about fairness. So I think this is going to be incredibly exciting. You will have – think about it. You're going to have Damian Lillard. You're going to have Zion. You're going to have Ja. Maybe Luka and, you know, heck, maybe Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, depending on, you know, how the league does the play-in. All of these guys could be in that type of tournament. So I think it's going to be incredibly exciting, and I like this proposal.
All right, so a couple things. One is on the Blazers. The idea that the Blazers are all of a sudden going to be some dangerous team, it should be noted, the Blazers' big three, if you will, this season, Dame, CJ, and Whiteside, all played right around 60 games, and they're below 500. They're 29-37. I have the utmost respect for Damian Lillard, but he is supposed to be one of the 10 best players in basketball, certainly one of the 12 best players in basketball. He's had CJ alongside him for 90% of the season. The fact that not having Zach Collins or Nurkic is why you're 8 games under 500 when you have had Whiteside, that ain't great. And so I don't buy into that Portland all of a sudden is going to flip a switch and be super dangerous. And here is the potential butterfly effect of this, Broussard, that I think people are like, well, could Zion make it? If he doesn't make it, Ja's going to be there. Oh, Portland. What about Portland? They would be fun. They were a Western Conference finalist next year. Don't be shocked if we wake up from this play-in and the boring old great coach San Antonio Spurs have found their way into the playoffs, and now we don't get Ja, yep, we don't get Zion, we don't get Dame, but a team that one would imagine will be able to deal with this upheaval better than any team in basketball because they're so well coached, because of the infrastructure, and because right now they're as close in the standings as Portland and New Orleans are. If they end up being the team that is the 8 seed, don't be shocked if all of a sudden we're like, oh, Kyrie and KD could be in for the first round. Yeah, or Brooklyn, who's right now in the playoffs, could find themselves out of the playoffs, and it's like, oh, glad we get Washington in there instead. Like, this doesn't necessarily go the exact way you, like, I don't want to say the media, but the television partners and the want it to, as far as adding more eyeballs, Broussard, to the opening part of the reopening of the NBA season.
Look, you make a good point. It could definitely be San Antonio. And I'll throw something else at you. If they have the play-in for the 7th and the 8th seeds, you could lose Luka. Dallas is in 7th and should definitely be in the playoffs. They're 10 or 11 games ahead of the 9th seed in the West, so yep, they should be in. But if they play in and they lose, you lose out on the next, you know, one of the next budding superstars in the league in Luka. So I hear where you're coming from, but remember, Nick, the play-in, even if the Spurs and the Wizards, you know, somehow get in the playoffs, the play-in is going to be excitement regardless of who wins because of all those names and all those young stars that'll be in it. Once you get to the playoffs, even if it is San Antonio, they'll be facing as an eighth seed, maybe they'll be facing the Lakers. So we're going to watch and be into it, because once the playoffs start, then you've got the legitimate contenders playing as well. So I hear where you're coming from, but I'm not concerned about that putting a damper on the excitement.
Hey, Broussard, I'm going to ask you this for two reasons. One, because I like to see the pained look on Nick's face that he doesn't have an official NBA vote on MVP or Rookie of the Year. The second one, I'm actually interested. We talk so much about, if Zion got the Pelicans to the playoff, maybe he could be Rookie of the Year. No, he didn't play enough games. Well, now the whole schedule is scrambled, and I feel like we're almost starting fresh. Do you think if Zion does a great job in these few warm-up games and then the play-ins and is able to either get them to the playoffs, or is there anything Zion can do to get your MVP vote? Rookie of the Year.
You mean Rookie of the Year. Right, Rookie of the Year. No way. No, and I did just talk to the league a couple days ago about this. I'm excited about these votes. They want to get people thinking about them again. But, no, part of the – what is the saying, the best ability is availability? There is no way you can win Rookie of the Year playing like a third of the season. It just can't happen. Patrick Ewing won Rookie of the Year playing like 50 games. That's the least amount ever. But it's not going to happen. Ja Morant was great. Maybe if there wasn't a player playing as well as Ja Morant had, then maybe. But I even doubt it then. You just need to play a certain number of games and play at least half the season, if not more, to get in to these postseason awards. So, no, there's nothing for me that Zion can do to be Rookie of the Year.
I think Ja's going to be unanimous Rookie of the Year. I don't think anyone will get another vote because of that, the season being abbreviated. I don't. Giannis is going to win MVP. I don't think he'll be unanimous. I think LeBron's going to get maybe 10% of the first place votes, but LeBron and Giannis will get all of the first and second place votes. I think maybe the most intriguing award is going to be Defensive Player of the Year. Is that going to go to Giannis or Anthony Davis? Giannis could do the very rare double dip MVP and Defensive Player of the Year. But most importantly, very quickly, Broussard, when you were on the phone with the NBA about the awards yesterday, did you talk about the most pressing issue at hand, which is for next season, when we have a nice new fresh season, maybe starting on Christmas, that your good friend, dare I say your brother, Nick Wright, will be freshly minted with an awards vote? Did you at least start that conversation, Broussard?
No comment.
Oh, yes. My God. This that might be a yes. God.
That might be a yes.
Perfect. Perfect. It could also be a no, so let's just hold off and wait.
Back here in First Things First with Super Bowl champ Greg Jennings, and we're drawing a blank. Cam Newton's former coach Ron Rivera weighed in on the free agent quarterback, saying, quote, Cam Newton with an edge for something to prove, don't ever bet against him. Went on to say he seems a little bit different now, his whole attitude. So, Nick, Ron Rivera's comments on Cam Newton are blank.
I think a little hollow. I believe that Ron Rivera, believes these. And I don't blame Ron Rivera for how the Panthers treated Cam Newton at the end, because Ron Rivera was already gone. But this doesn't do much for Cam Newton. This doesn't help Cam Newton much in the here and the now. And I want to be clear. I don't even blame Ron Rivera for not trying to go out and sign Cam Newton, because I think that would put Washington in a rough spot in regards to they still want to show faith and commitment to Dwayne Haskins. And if Cam is there, the fans are going to be immediately clamoring for Cam to be the starter, not a first-round pick, and Haskins, who's only had half a year as a starter under his belt. So I don't blame Rivera for not showing free agent interest in Cam, given his situation. But these comments are a little hollow to me, Greg, because they don't really help Cam at all. The whole football world knew Rivera and Cam had a good relationship, so I don't really see the utility of these comments, Greg.
Yeah, I hear you, and I agree. I'm going to take it a step further and say it just feels hypocritical, because you say these things, and yes, they're hollow, but for you to have the opportunity to go and potentially get Cam Newton, a player who you know would make your team better, and this league is all about winning games. and trying to make sure that a first round draft pick, you save face with that. That's not Ron Rivera's responsibility as a new coach. Like, I want to win. I want to make sure I bring in a guy, and he brought in a guy that he had relationship with, and that was Kyle Allen versus a Cam Newton. So I think it's a little hypocritical.
Huh. Interesting. I went 44 to 72. The reason I picked those two numbers is when we got this question in our meeting, it was 44 degrees in Foxborough. Very cold. Doesn't seem like it's going to be a nice day, but it's headed up to 72. And although I promised I would only get back on the Jared the Javelin train, I'm wavering a little bit. There was a little article this weekend. No one talked about it, but it was the first time we saw that Patriots and Cam had talked in the preseason. The article didn't even have a byline on it. But I took it, and I stashed it away, and I said, you know what, guys? Bring back out the Cam Newton Photoshop. So, Jenna, I'm getting a little more optimistic about Cam to the Patriots.
Of course that's where you went, Wilds. Greg, I'm with you. I thought it was a little hypocritical. On to the Cowboys now. Hall of Famer Troy Aikman had some high praise for his former team, saying, quote, the Cowboys are as talented as any team in the NFL. Now they got to live up to that. Where have I heard that before? Oh, yeah, any year, any season, ever in Dallas. Nick, Aikman's comments on the Dallas Cowboys are blank.
They're exactly right. Listen, you can make the argument Baltimore, top to bottom, has a better roster. The Saints, one could argue, top to bottom, has a better roster. I don't know if you could make the argument that the Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs have a better roster 1 through 53 because the Chiefs have deficiencies, so many deficiencies on defense. So I agree with these comments. The question for the Cowboys are, does Dak take at least a half, if not a full step forward? And how big of an upgrade is going from Jason Garrett to Greg's former coach, Manny won a Super Bowl with Mike McCarthy? But there is no question about the overall talent on the roster, and that's without the Cowboys trading for Jamal Adams, which they still might do. So I understand some people think our friend and colleague Troy Aikman is at times a little biased towards the Cowboys. I don't know if that's true. It'd be hard to blame him if he was, but I don't think these are biased comments at all. I think this is a very sober reading of the talent on the roster, and we'll see if the coach, the new coach, and the unsigned quarterback can elevate them to the level of Super Bowl, not only contender, but one of the favorites in the NFC.
Yeah, this is a harsh reality. Troy Aikman is spot on here, and this is a harsh reality of their roster is really, really good. And I agree, there aren't a lot of coaches that would say, I'm not going to take that opportunity to lead that team. And his message again to pointing out Mike McCarthy, my former head coach, the message is going to be different. And anytime you have a really good team and a talented team and a underproductive team, sometimes you just have to change the voice. And Mike McCarthy has an opportunity. I think Dak Prescott has played well. He'll be good. It's up to Mike McCarthy, and I think they'll get it done.
Well, Jenna, you can circle this day on your calendar because this is the day that I compliment the Chiefs and Nick underestimates the Chiefs. I don't know what happened. I put trade worthy. I thought Aikman's comments were spot on. I had Reed, Harbaugh, Carroll, and Sean Payton as the only coaches that wouldn't trade rosters with the Cowboys. But Nick doesn't believe in the Chiefs, and I do. So circle your calendars, America. Today's the day it happened.
Finally. On to the Bucks now, with Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski taking their talents to Tampa. Expectations are pretty, pretty high. So high that a recent NFL.com column says anything short of a Super Bowl would be an unsuccessful season. There are lofty goals, and then there's what's happening in Tampa. Nick, a successful first season for Brady and the Bucks would be blank.
Yeah, with respect to the NFL.com columnist, that's a ludicrous take. It's just a bad take. I can't endorse that take. A successful season for the Brady and the Bucs would be one with a playoff win. A super successful season would be one with two playoff wins, which would mean a trip to the conference championship game. Anything past that is unrealistic and would be a just over the top as it would be Jordan when he went to the Wizards making the NBA Finals. You weren't even discussing that as a possibility. So I agree with the idea that, especially now that the playoffs have been expanded, simply making it to the playoffs, limping into the postseason, being knocked out in the first round unceremoniously, like Tom Brady was, of course, from the last time he was in the playoffs on a pick six, losing the game against the juggernaut Titans. That wouldn't be successful, just getting to the playoffs. But if they were to win a playoff game, because, man, it's been a long time since Tom Brady's won a playoff game, it's been even longer since the Bucks did, that, to me, Greg, would obviously be a successful season.
Yeah, I hear you. I disagree. I think I'm not where the columnist is, but I think a Super Bowl appearance would be a success, not so much a win. And the reason I say that is because they're in the more challenging, the more difficult conference. To get into the playoffs is going to be a task in and of itself. To win the NFC championship will be a feat. And I just don't think that they would have enough left to finish the job against either the Kansas City Chiefs, Baltimore Ravens, or who have you representing out of the AFC. And I didn't want to say just the Kansas City Chiefs just to make Nick feel some type of way.
Oh, my goodness.
And me, because I'm also a Kansas City guy now. I got another Kansas City take. I wrote 1993 Kansas City Chiefs. Joe Montana's year, 11-5, won two playoff games, lost in the AFC Championship. If Tom Brady could replicate that, it's largely remembered as a success. Get to the championship game, lose. You don't need to make it to the Super Bowl. Everyone look back and say, oh, it was great. He was 11-5. He's like Montana.
All right, Peter King released his power rankings for the 2020 season. He's got the Steelers, the team whose quarterback is coming off elbow surgery and fighting his way back into playing shape. Those Steelers coming in at number 10. With King saying, healthy, this is a Super Bowl contending team. Nick, the Steelers being 10th in Peter King's power rankings are blank.
It's tough to be a Super Bowl contender when you're the third best team in your own division, which they will be because they're not only going to be behind Baltimore, as Peter has them, but also behind Cleveland. So my answer is, this is an insult to Cleveland. Because this is clearly underrating, once again, the Cleveland Browns, and I'm not going to stand for it. Here's what happened, Jenna. A lot of folks last year were a year early on the Browns, myself included. You and some others said, let's pump the brakes, let's wait. I would act like you've been there before, even if you haven't been there before. Win a Super Bowl before you even learned to speak English or whatever the criticisms you guys appeared to be correct. And because of that, far too many of you and your ilk are now taking a victory lap this season and doing the reverse of what I did last season. Peter King is one of these people, which is they're just dismissing Cleveland out of hand. Oh, they have all this talent. They have a new head coach. They had an excellent offseason. They addressed the offensive line. They're going to be the third or fourth best team in their own division. Look out for Cincinnati and Joe Burrow. So there's no way that the Steelers can be a Super Bowl contender when they're going to be the third best team in their own division. So that's what I say to Peter King. It's an insult to Cleveland. Greg Jennings.
You know, Nick, I was there, and then I assessed it a little longer and a little deeper. And I'm buying it. When you look at this defense, and this is what makes this team scary. They're a defensive team, and they play really good defense. They get the ball back to their offense. They couldn't put up enough points last year because they didn't have their quarterback. And now you add Ben Roethlisberger in there. And the point that he made was a healthy Pittsburgh Steelers, meaning healthy Ben Roethlisberger. They are a Super Bowl contending team. And you look at the AFC, it's not a lot in front of them. I'm not putting Cleveland in front of them. I'm saying they're about even, or if not above Cleveland. Baltimore and Kansas City are the teams to beat. They can be in that discussion.
See, this is why I'm surprised there's been no Cam to Pittsburgh talk. Or at least that it hasn't. They haven't pursued Cam super aggressively. Yeah, if Roethlisberger's healthy, yeah, go to the Super Bowl. But if not, like he wasn't last year, you're 8-8. But Cam is sitting there. You know Cam is better than the backups you have now. So I'm surprised they don't just try to grab Cam right now, put him on the team, and have a big insurance policy if anything goes wrong with Big Ben, Jenna.
That I like. That's a great idea. All right, let's talk some basketball now. Could Zion on the Pelicans make some noise in the NBA playoffs? Next on First Things First. Back here at Chris Broussard, which means we're running our fast break. First up, the NBA playoffs, with the 22-team format expected to overwhelmingly pass Thursday's vote. That would mean rookie sensation Zion Williamson and his Pelicans would get a chance to make a postseason push. Nick, how dangerous can Zion and New Orleans be in the playoffs?
Well, I obviously don't think they could beat the Lakers, but we don't know if the play-in is going to be for the 7 and the 8, if they're going to reseed 1 through 16, and then all of a sudden, maybe you're playing the Raptors, the Clippers in the first round. They could throw a scare into any team in the league other than Milwaukee and the Lakers, and here's why. This team's 22-14 after their horrific 6-22 start. That's not all because of Zion. Zion's only been around for nearly the last 20 games. So they were playing well before Zion got back. And one has to wonder what type of minutes restriction, if at all, would he be under? Because with him on the court this year, their net rating is plus 13, which is better than the Bucks' net rating with Giannis on the court. With him on the court, they've been extraordinary. So I do think that they could be a dangerous, dangerous team if they do find a way into this postseason wilds.
Well, they're about a 500 team when he plays, Nick, but I'll tell you the real reason Zion's in. You know, NBA is a star-making vehicle. Zion's television debut did 88% better than the game the previous year. So while I don't know how dangerous the Pelicans will be, I know that the Zion factor will most be felt not on the court, but at your home, because I think ratings are going to go through the roof with Zion involved.
Look, they are a great shot to get into the playoffs and win the play-in tournament. I mean, I don't know that they'd be the favorite, but they certainly have a shot. But, Nick, your lack of respect for the Clippers is just comical. Really? Zion and the Pelicans could put a scare into the Clippers? The problem is they're going to face, like you said, if they face the Lakers, no chance to win. If they face the Clippers, no chance to win. No chance. Mark my words right now, no chance to beat a healthy Clippers team. Milwaukee, they couldn't beat. I wouldn't pick them over Toronto either just because of the experience of the Raptors. So they'll be sexy and fun in the play-in tournament, and it'd be great if they get in, but they can't win the first round.
Okay, hold on. I said throw a scare into, and that means the series goes at least six. That's all it means. That's all it means. It goes six. If a series goes six, you go walk it. Yeah, that's the official definition. Throw a scare into, it means it goes six. Look it up. And what I won't abide by is your disrespect for Zion. Yesterday, we were short on time, so I had to listen to you rant about how dare you have him a tier above Jason Tatum. Have him a tier above Jason Tatum because he averages in year one the exact to the tenth of a point, same amount of points as Jason Tatum, despite playing less than 30 minutes per game. If Zion in the playoffs is allowed to play 35 minutes a night, and if they were to get the Clippers, there is a game six in New Orleans to force a game seven. Now, it probably ends there, but hey, Kawhi might need a load management day that game, and then we'd get game seven in. Well, I guess not in New Orleans. It'd all be in Orlando. But you understand what I'm saying. So, yeah, I would stand by that. Throw a scare into anyone other than Milwaukee and the Lakers, Jenna. Mark it down.
Well, as long as you guys are on the same page, that makes me happy. On to LeBron James. Many wondering if the 35-year-old will be able to bounce back from the three-month hiatus when the NBA returns. I'm 35 now. I know how hard it would be for me to do something like this. His teammate, Quinn Cook, isn't worried at all, saying, quote, I know LeBron's going to come back and not miss a beat. Nick, my friend, how do you see LeBron being affected by the layoff?
Well, once again, I'm amazed by Jenna Wolf's selfishness and not using her time machine for greater things than just her own personal looks. Like, you've had access to this. If you're 35, you've had access to the time machine for 12 years. We're in kind of a rough spot in America right now. Maybe you could have used it for some good. All right, but more importantly, let's talk about, listen, I feel like I could be the prosecutor or the defense attorney on this. One could argue that LeBron, that with older players, regiment and routine is so important that LeBron could be more negatively affected by the layoff than just about any of our great players, because he's obviously the far oldest of our great players. But the flip side to that is nobody spends more money on their body. Nobody has a better setup within quarantine to stay in shape and to stay working out. And nobody has a better group of people around them to prepare for an unprecedented situation. I lean towards the latter than the former. I think that LeBron's actually going to be on the plus side of how this layoff affects guys. But I would understand if you say he's 35 years old, he had an impromptu diversion in his season last year with the injury, and now he's got the impromptu diversion this season because of the quarantine. Is he going to be able to activate that playoff form the way we've seen every year since 2012?
Yeah, Nick, one thing you said there, I don't know if LeBron has the best setup in quarantine to play basketball, but he certainly has a good one. For start, I've been shocked by how many Instagram videos we've seen of NBA players who have the, like, hutch hoop that you buy from the sporting goods store that you have to fill up with water and putting in your driveway, and they're shooting on that. I'm like, geez, that's what you've got. So I don't think LeBron is going to be in trouble, but I think we're going to see some superstar be in real trouble. Be like, what do you want me to do? I was playing with a $99 hoop I had to get, and I had to fill it up with water and cement blocks to hold it down.
I agree, Wild. I've got a better setup at my home than some of these NBA players, which has been shocking. But look, I bet you LeBron is going to be one of the top five players in terms of being in shape that we see coming back. You know, he's got the resources, as Nick said, to work out as, you know, probably better than anyone else. And he's got the motivation because he understands this could be his last shot or second to last shot to really win a championship. I think he is going to come back and play tremendously. Of course, at 35, you never know when a guy's going to fall off. It could hit you all of a sudden. That's a possibility. But I would bet on LeBron being tremendous when he comes back. We know that playoff LeBron is always the best LeBron because he sees that light at the end of the tunnel of being able to win a championship. But even in regular years, even though he's got that extra motivation, you've got 82 games of wear and tear on you. Now he's going to have that motivation without the wear and tear, with the 3 to 4 month resting period. I think LeBron's going to come back and be great. The question is, will the rest of the Lakers be able to hang with him?
That's true, but that 3 month off is going to help LeBron a ton. On to Chris Paul now, who recently opened up about his time with the Lob City Clippers and why they never won a title, saying, quote, Doc Rivers used to always say, in order to win a championship, you got to be lucky. We never were lucky. Nick, CP3 wasn't lucky?
I guess a little bit, because Blake had some injuries, and I get that, but... You know, to steal a quote off Daryl Morey's Twitter page, opportunity is not a lengthy visitor. And the Clippers had 1 year they were a little lucky. 2015, game 7 against the Spurs comes down to the final possession. Chris Paul makes an unbelievable off-balance baseline bank shot falling down to knock the Spurs out. In 2015, remember, the Cavs, who were going to come out on the other side of the bracket, had David Blatt as their coach. Kevin Love was already hurt. Kyrie was about to get hurt. The Warriors weren't champions yet. That was their opportunity. And what did they do? They had a 19-point lead late in Game 6 at home against Daryl Morey's Houston Rockets, and they let Josh Smith and Corey Brewer rain threes on their heads en route to blowing that game. They then lost Game 7, and it's the closest the Clippers ever came. It would have been really fascinating to see that Clippers team take on a Warriors team that hadn't won a title yet. The Steph CP3 rivalry was really heating up at that point in time. We never got to see it. That wasn't bad luck. That was a gag job by them, unfortunately. And so to me, that was their missed opportunity. I can't blame that on Luck, Wilds.
I'm going to take people, I'm going to use a phrase from Jalen Rose, take people behind the curtain. You know what makes for terrible sports television? Being like, you know what? I did my analysis of that game and just a lot of luck. Back to you, Broussard. Just doesn't work. So you can never talk about luck, but Broussard, but Chris Paul's right. Doc Rivers is right. Let's look at the Last Dance. Lucky that Steve Kerr hit that shot. We're lucky that Karl Malone missed those true free throws. We're lucky that Dennis Rodman didn't get body slammed when he went to wrestle in between finals games. So luck always has had a factor. Chris Paul is right, Broussard.
How dare you, Wilds? Michael Jordan was never lucky. It was always skill and heart and grit. All right? But look, this is revisionist history by Chris Paul. Yes, as Nick pointed out, his last 2 years in Los Angeles, they did have injuries with Blake Griffin and even with himself. But they had their chances. In 2015, Nick pointed out the loss to Houston. Remember, Nick, they were also up 3-1 in that series and then lost the next three games to the Rockets. The year before, they could go up in game five, 3-2 over Oklahoma City. Remember, they're up 7 with 45 seconds left. And Chris Paul, who had been incredibly clutch throughout his career to that point, just melts down in the last 40 seconds, has two big turnovers. They lose that game, going to lose the series. Look, on paper, that team looks great. All the way to the bench with Doc Rivers as the coach. The fact is, those big names, Doc, Chris, and Blake, and if you want to throw in DeAndre Jordan, they just never got it done. It's as simple as that.
Let's talk some football. You guys see that awesome video of Josh Allen throwing to Stephon Diggs? You think the Bills are good enough to win the AFC East? We discuss next. First things first.
I'm using Jenna's time machine to look into the future.
Back here with Greg Jennings. Time for stories to start your morning. Chicago Bears head coach Matt Nagy was recently asked how Mitch Trubisky was handling the quarterback competition with Nick Foles. You know, because he was the starter, and then they went out and signed a second starter, and there can only be one starter. But Nagy said Trubisky was, quote, taking this head on. He's accepted it. He understands it. Nick, how do you see this playing out in Chicago?
Yeah, I think this plays out really well for Mitch Trubisky, assuming he doesn't have to play this year. Listen, Mitch is in a great spot. He's a former first-round white NFL quarterback, so we know how this is going to play out for him. He fails at his first spot, another team gives him a chance, and then he settles into a nice decade-long career as a highly compensated backup quarterback, who it's like, hey, their starter goes down, don't forget, they got former top five overall pick Mitch Trubisky backing him up. So the worst thing that could happen for Mitch is have to play more. Like, no, that wouldn't be good. So stay on the sidelines. Foles, win this competition, stay healthy, stay out of the headlines, and he'll be in the league into 2030, backing up various quarterbacks, making probably a little more money than he should. So, yeah, I think this way, as long as he's accepting that, Wilds, and he understands that, I think this works out great for him.
Yeah, when you've got two quarterbacks, you've got none. I think we've seen this movie before in Jacksonville. It's going to play out the same way, but without the supporting actor of a cool mustache. It's going to be one quarterback, maybe an injury. Other quarterback will come in. Oh, now Minshew's not playing well. Let's put Foles back in. Oh, Foles not playing well. Let's put Gardner back in. It's going to play out the exact same way. And Chicago's going to be looking at the draft like, who's available? Is there anybody coming out of some random school that we can grab? So it's going to be more of the same in Chicago.
I don't know, man. I'm of the thinking that Mitchell Trubisky will win the starting job in Chicago. And before you laugh, here's why. When you look at the starting job and you look at who's competing for the starting job, Nick Foles, injury prone. If he gets injured, Chicago, the Bears have to go back to Mitchell Trubisky. Or if you give Nick Foles the starting job, if he outright wins it, and then he's not playing well, you got to go back to Mitchell Trubisky. That is not what you want to do. If anything, you want to go to Nick Foles. So you allow Mitchell Trubisky the opportunity to win it outright. If he doesn't play good in the first 2 weeks, then you can move on to Nick Foles. Everybody's happy, and they are the Bears. That's just the reality. They're still looking for a quarterback.
Or... Or, guys, get rid of them both, bring in Cam Newton. Problem solved. On to New England now. Uh-huh. A recent report says Bill Belichick still leans on Nick Saban and Chip Kelly as unofficial scouting confidants for the Patriots. Could explain steal the draft Kyle Duggar out of D2, Lenore Ryan. Greg, is this just typical Belichick always trying to get a leg up on the competition?
No, I think this is just smart. He understands the two coaches that he's in discussion with and that he's relying on. They're very demanding of their players. They have success. They've been successful in the collegiate ranks. And when you look at specifically Nick Saban, he's going to be that hard-nosed coach who's going to ask much, very, very much of his players and demand it out of them, as well as his coaching staff. And so I think Belichick understands that and wants to have players that he knows will be able to take that type of coaching, that style of coaching, and just simply do their job.
Nick, I'm fascinated on how this actually plays out. Remember when I was going through my fever dream about Tua to the Patriots, and then I was like, maybe Jalen Hurts to the Patriots, and neither happened. And our researcher, Dusty, said, hey, Wilds, since 2008, the Patriots have only drafted 6 players from Alabama. So I guess Nick Saban is actually doing other research on maybe other SEC players or other teams that he's playing against, but we're not actually getting any Alabama players.
Well, and you're also last few years haven't gotten very many good players. Like, I don't know what Belichick's draft philosophy is, but, well, no, this is, listen, Belichick's the greatest coach ever and the best manager of the cap we've seen ever, certainly, well, since the cap's been in existence last quarter century. He's not a great drafter. He just understands he's not a great drafter, which is why he's always trading back to get as many bites at the apple, as many lottery tickets as possible. Last draft the Patriots had, you're like, wow, they nailed it, was 2015 when they got Trey Flowers in the 4th round, Shaq Mason in the 4th round. That was an objectively excellent draft. They don't draft a lot of Pro Bowlers. They've had a ton of trouble drafting corners, even though they've spent so many draft picks on them. So maybe he needs to lean away from Saban and Chip Kelly if they've been as concierges on the draft over the last few years. And one final point quickly, Wilds, in the previous topic, you mentioned Jacksonville's quarterback situation. Remember, Jacksonville. Remember their old quarterback, Blake Bortles. How's his life right now? It's great. Doesn't have to play football. Lives in Los Angeles. Backup quarterback. That's the future for Mitch Trubisky. Mitch, if you play your cards right, you can follow the Blake Bortles path. You got your first round quarterback money. Now you get to chill out and you don't have to play. It's the best of all worlds. Go ahead, Jenna.
I love when Nick has a point. No matter when it comes in the show, it's going to make it. On to the Bills now. Let's stay in the AFC East. Their third year quarterback, Josh Allen, finally got some work in with his newest wide receiver, Stephon Diggs. The two working out together down in Florida. Greg, I'll start with you. What's the ceiling for this Bills team this season?
This Bills team, they have a chance. Nick doesn't like when I talk about Josh Allen because he thinks in the playoff game he was throwing to any and everybody. But he showed a lot of grit. Obviously, he was able to run the football. Now he has another receiver to throw the ball to, a receiver that's dependable and that's reliable and that can catch the football with his hands out of the air. I like the Buffalo Bills, what Coach McDermott has been able to do defensively, the mental approach, the culture change. He's done some tremendous things there. I think they have a chance to be a playoff team that moves deeper in the playoffs this year.
Jenna, I didn't know that Nick is allowed to just break format and talk about anything. So I want to bring up why I think Zion deserves Rookie of the Year votes with Broussard. See, Broussard, here's the problem. No, I'm like, I guess I'm so starved for football. If we could run the video again. It doesn't matter. I'm so hungry for football. The more soccer goals and field hockey goals there are on the footage, the more I'm excited. Oh, you're wearing a baseball hat? Sure. I don't care if it doesn't look like NFL football. I'm still interested. Slow motion in T-shirts. I love it. There's a cardio ship in the background and some soccer goals. I'm all in on this, Nick.
I'm all in on, once again, borrowing Jenna Wolf's time machine, because I'm going to go to about week 4 of the upcoming NFL season. And this is what we're going to see. We're going to see this. And that's Stephon Diggs on the sideline after Josh Allen has fired the ball all over the field when he's running wide open. Stephon, you're my guy. You didn't love having Kirk Cousins. Well, wait till you meet Josh Allen. I'm excited for you. I'm excited to see you mic'd up this year. Should be a barrel of laughs for you, Stephon.
Nick, everyone's high on Josh Allen coming into this season. He might surprise you.
I know.
On to the Browns now. Their former first-round quarterback Brady Quinn had some high praise for their current first overall pick, Baker Mayfield. Quinn predicting that Baker will be a top 10 quarterback in 2020 en route to carrying the Browns to the playoffs. Big year for Baker. Nick, you share Brady Quinn's optimism about Baker and the Browns?
Yeah, I think Baker can be the ninth best quarterback in football. We are short on time, so I can't list the eight that I don't think he can jump ahead of. But I think with those weapons, the improvement on the offensive line, a real living, breathing NFL head coach, I think he can be the ninth best quarterback in football. So I'd take it a step further than Brady. I'd say he can be a top nine quarterback this season. But I like to be very precise with my predictions. Other people like to go to round numbers, which is why I went top 10 wild.
I'm not precise at all. Greg, I'm like, yeah, top 10, sure, until I actually do the math, and I've got him about 15. 15's still pretty good, but sure, top 10, it just sounds better than top 10. I'm not as precise as Nick is.
Yeah, I think he can be a top 10 quarterback, but this is kind of like listening to Nick talk about Tom Brady and falling off the cliff and being washed up. Eventually, you're going to be right, and eventually we're going to see a really good Baker Mayfield. I just think we're all hopeful for it more than it is a reality.
Where do you have him? Greg?
I got him about 13th.
Okay,
you're
all
wrong. I like the
Baker
Mayfield.
Use your top 19 quarterback.
Tell us where he lands.
We got to go. I'm 35 years old. We will see you tomorrow. Have a great, safe day, everyone.